and on for 10 minutes. "I noticed," Eddie said. "She's probably gauging if we'd be interested in a threesome." "No." Eddie drank his beer and watched Michelle, who stood next to her husband Chris, but didn't bother to avert her gaze from the twins. Chris, long barbecue tongs in one hand and his phone in the other, was focused squarely on the glowing 4-inch screen of his phone.
"Chris is a moron," Eddie said. "I could screw Michelle right next to him and he'd never know."
"Well, don't." Eddie shrugged one shoulder and grinned, as though he wasn't committing one way or the other.
"You know, I think she's fucking me because she thinks I'm with Ellie."
"That's twisted."
"It is, but I'm not complaining."
"Need another?" Eddie held up his empty beer bottle. "Sure." Jack wandered over to the smoker to talk to the men, passing Michelle as she walked toward the others. Jack glanced over his shoulder and saw Eddie and Michelle standing apart from everyone, heads close together, talking. Michelle laughed and touched Eddie on his arm.
"Check that. Flirting."
He turned his attention back to the men and thought he caught Chris duck his head down quickly. A muscle in Chris's jaw tensed. He wasn't as big a moron as Eddie thought.
"Hey, Brian. Seen Kyle lately," Jack said.
Brian wore an aged Carhartt jacket and a retro cowboy's toboggan on his head to ward off the cold. He dragged on his cigarette and blew smoke out the side of his mouth.
"My half-brother and I don't run in the same circles."
"Why?"
"I have a few questions for him."
"What about?"
Jack didn't answer and addressed Matt instead.
"He still work for you?"
"He doesn't work for me, he works for the company. Floats around doing what needs to be done."
"Who does he report to?"
"Whoever needs him," Matt said, eyes flicking to Chris and back to the grill. Jack watched Michelle's husband, who appeared to be enthralled with his phone, but Jack suspected he'd heard every word.
"Chris, how about you?" Jack said. "You seen Kyle Grant lately?"
Chris looked up from his phone.
"What?"
He tried to feign ignorance.
"Kyle Grant. He ever work for you?"
"Some." "I heard he'd been working for you almost exclusively these past few months," Brian said.
He blew the cigarette smoke right at Chris's face.
"I thought you two never talked," Chris said.
Jack had never seen Chris bareheaded and wondered if he was bald beneath his black Titleist hat.
"He comes around when he wants something. Not lightly, though. Guess someone's been taking care of him," Brian said.
"How about Paco? Seen him lately?" Jack said.
"Not since before we talked." "Do you seriously think he was one of those arson victims?" Chris asked.
"It's looking more and more likely."
"Weird the two employees of yours have gone missing lately," Jack said.
"Kyle didn't work for me," Chris said.
"Come on, let's eat," Matt said.
He closed the grill and carried the overflowing pan to the table. Brian flicked his cigarette away and followed. Chris pocketed his phone. Everyone loaded their plates with food and sat around the fire to eat. Much to Jack's relief, the only spot left for him to sit was next to Ellie. Maybe he imagined it, but he thought he could smell her perfume beneath the smoky, sweet aroma of the ribs. He focused so hard on not looking at her or talking to her. He worried his avoidance was counterproductive and a neon sign was flashing over their heads.
"You aren't eating much."
His eyes were on the thick white paper plate balanced on her knees. A small rib, maybe 2 tablespoons of potato salad, and a couple of chips were almost lost amid the white of the plate.
"I'm not very hungry."
Everyone around the fire was eating or talking to others, so he took a chance and looked at her. He kept his voice low.
"You look thin." "That doesn't sound like a compliment."
"What was that this morning?"
"Me being petty? I can be that way sometimes. You didn't know that about me, did you?"
They held each other's gaze. The last time Ellie said those words to him was the night they decided to stay apart until January, the last night they made love. She looked away. What did you lie about? She poked at her potato salad and sighed.
When I said I didn't miss you.
Words tumbled out of him, tripping over themselves in a race to finally find their voice.
I was fine, or told myself I was until I saw you Thursday night and yesterday and today. But Christ, I can't do it anymore. I need to be alone with you.
I don't mean to eavesdrop,
Amy said. Jack and Ellie's heads jerked up. His stomach twisted and the ground spun. Amy had been too far away to hear, hadn't she? Had they been talking too loud?
Did I hear you say you're writing a book?
Amy looked across the fire, away from them.
I am,
Julie said. She raised her eyebrows at Jack. He had no idea what she wanted from him. Had he ever?
Do you mind, honey?
She asked Jack in a sweet voice. Everyone stared at him, except Ellie. Tension emanated from her. He resisted the urge to leave and take her with him, to stick a flag in their relationship for all to see. This is the woman I love and want to be with. He knew everyone around the fire, save one, would understand his choice. Unfortunately, that one was the woman he'd made vows to 15 years earlier, the mother of his son, the woman he was trying to convince that he was making an effort with their marriage, the woman he'd promised to make love to that night. He had no idea what Julie was going to say, what fiction she would feed these people. But he had no choice but to go along.
It's your story. Tell it if you like.
Well, about a year ago, or a little more, right, honey?
She didn't wait for Jack to respond.
I went on a sabbatical.
Matt licked the sauce from his fingers with a smack. I thought only professors and priests went on sabbaticals.
Anyone can. It's a time of rest, reflection, and study.
What did you need to rest from?
Brian threw a bare rib bone into the fire.
Mine was more of a time of reflection. A chance to be by myself to find who I am again, to discover my identity. For so many years, I was Jack's wife, Ethan's mother, someone's neighbor, a beloved daughter, school volunteer, church volunteer.
Jack twisted his mouth to keep from smirking. Until they moved to Stillwater, Julie hadn't been to church in 10 years.
But who was I really? I needed time to find out.
Jack, you were on board with this?
Brian asked. At that moment, Jack kinda liked him. He was obviously the only one of the group who was going to be willing to call Julie on her bullshit. Poor Julie. She had no idea how ridiculous she sounded, but Jack gave her credit for throwing the church in. She knew her audience, at least.
Jack was 100% behind me. In fact, it was his idea.
Everyone turned their attention to Jack, expressions of astonishment on the men's faces and admiration on the women's. Grudging in Kelly's case. Jack bit into the meat on the rib he held and ripped it from the bone so he didn't have to speak.
You're a better man than me, Brian Grant said. Or maybe just stupider. I can't decide.
Yeah, I wouldn't have been behind that, Matt said. A girl's weekend here and there, sure. But there's no way I could handle my job and the kids and everything else by myself for a year.
Me either,
Chris said, not looking up from his phone.
It's not rocket science, Michelle said. I do it all day, every day. Career, family, volunteering, social life. So do Kelly and Susan.
Yes, we know, Michelle,
Chris said tonelessly.
Don't patronize me, Christopher.
Chris turned his head toward Michelle and glared at his wife, who glared right back.
So what about this book? Matt said.
It's going to be a bit like Eat, Pray, Love, without the divorce and the Italian lover. My agent thinks it's going to be a bestseller.
Sounds like a real snoozer, Brian said.
Eddie spurted beer from his mouth when he laughed.
Sorry.
Julie glared at Eddie.
And I couldn't have done any of it without Jack's love and support.
Ellie stood.
Anyone need a beer?
Everyone raised their hands and started calling out their orders.
I'll help, Jack said.
He put his plate on the log and followed. Ellie squatted in front of the cooler, her back turned to the fire. Jack squatted next to her, but angled so he could see anyone walk up. They were far enough away for their conversation to be unheard by the others.
How much of it is true?
Ellie asked. None of it. When I found her, she was at a luxury resort in California, fucking an artsy photographer half her age. She believes it, though. Ellie handed the beers to Jack, who opened them and placed them on the table.
It's killing me to be so close to you and not touch you,
Jack whispered. Ellie stood, her knees creaking. She held out an unopened beer to Jack. He wrapped his hand around hers on the bottle and twisted the cap off. He kept his hand over hers and remembered the first time they met, how her hands flowed across the papers on her desk, and the last time they touched, how she intertwined her hands in his while they made love. Ellie took a shaky breath.
I need to tell you something. I should have told you that last night at the lake, but I was too angry, drunk, and honestly, I wanted to make you suffer, to wonder. Have you suffered?
Yes. Have you?
Yes.
She paused and looked off toward the woods.
I thought you were crazy to tell me you loved me after a week. I still do.
Their eyes locked, and one side of her mouth curled up into a wry smile.
But damn it if I don't feel the same way.
She shook her head and rolled her eyes to the heavens.
Not how or where I wanted to tell you.
Joy and guilt warred within him. Of course he had thought Ellie loved him. Why else put herself through this separation? But to hear her say it made Jack feel like he could bench press Chris's smoker. Then, guilt of his betrayal of Ellie every time he slept with Julie overcame him.
Ellie,
I'm not finished. I don't know how things are with Julie, and I don't want to know. But you have to promise me something.
Anything.
She looked at him full on.
If you decide to stay with her, you have to resign. Leave town. I can't bear to be around the two of you.
I'm not going to stay with her.
If you do, promise me.
Jack clenched his jaw. He should have never let Ellie talk him into this farce they were living. He'd been weak, willing to say or do anything to make her happy. This, though, this was a bridge too far.
I've done everything you've wanted, even though it's made me miserable. Why don't you believe me when I say I love you and I'm going to leave Julie?
She let out her breath, her eyes lingering on his lips.
I want to.
I want you to.
Her brows furrowed. Then the corner of her mouth quirked up into a wry smile.
I said, I want to. To believe you. Not I want you.
You're killing me over here.
She looked down, a blush working its way up her neck, and looked at him from beneath her eyelashes.
The wanting goes without saying.
You can say it. Ellie's laugh died when Julie's voice rang out across the fire.
What's so funny?
Chapter 15.
Were you talking to us?
Ellie handed Julie a shiner, the beer from the cooler with the most calories.
You two look so cozy. I thought you'd like to share the joke, Julie said.
Julie's eyes were clear, calculating as they moved from Jack to Ellie, from suspicion to disbelief. Ellie could almost hear Julie's thought. You're fucking her. Sitting next to Julie, Kelly looked mortified.
I was thanking Jack for offering to talk to the developers coming in on Tuesday to meet with me and Matt. Developers? What are you talking about?
Michelle's voice was brittle, her eyes blazing as she stared at her brother across the fire.
An old friend of mine from Dallas is in historical preservation. He wants to restore the hotel. Curtis knows a chef who wants to open a small locavore restaurant, Ellie said.
Dad won't like that, Michelle said.
Will your developer bring his own contractors into town? Brian asked.
We haven't gotten that far, but I'm sure he'll bid out the business.
Ellie's gaze wandered to Kelly, who studied her as though trying to put together a complicated puzzle. Julie's eyes hadn't left Ellie either. Ellie met the other woman's direct gaze across the fire and didn't blink. She was not going to be intimidated by her.
You're lucky you have Yorkie on your side, Matt, Brian said. If anyone can close the deal, it's Ellie.
Yorkie? Julie said. It was her nickname in high school, Michelle said. Go on. Tell our new friends how you got it.
Ellie narrowed her eyes at Michelle.
And ruin your moment of fun? I'd never. She got it from basketball, Susan said, speaking up for the first time. She was a tenacious defender. She would lock on her opponent and never let go. She was the best player Stillwater's ever had.
Ellie looked at the ground, barely resisting the urge to leave. She didn't like to think about it, and she definitely didn't like to talk about it.
Not that there's much competition in that department, Michelle said.
Ellie gritted her teeth.
Control, control, control.
Too bad about the point shaving. How exactly does it work?
Ellie lifted her head slowly to meet Julie's smirk.
That was a bunch of bullshit, Brian said. Everyone who knows Ellie knows it.
Ellie looked from Julie to her oldest and best friend, waiting for her to say something, to defend Ellie as she had so many times before. Finally, Kelly said,
It isn't something she likes to talk about.
That was her best friend's idea of defending her. The roar in Ellie's ears started low and grew, so she almost didn't hear the next comment.
Guilty conscience, maybe. I suppose a guilty conscience is something you would know a lot about, Julie.
Ellie tossed her plate of uneaten food in the fire, turned, and walked off. As she hit the tree line, Ellie heard Amy say in a falsely bright voice it was time for s'mores. She made it 50 yards into the woods before she threw up the little bit of beer she drank. She wiped her mouth and leaned against a tree, her stomach still roiling. She felt her forehead with the back of her hand for the 1,000th time since Thursday.
Ellie?
Ellie closed her eyes and sighed.
Over here.
Kelly walked around the tree. Ellie could just see her through the darkness.
What the hell was that back there? I was going to ask you the same thing, Kelly said. My best friend sitting by and letting some stranger insult me is what I saw.
Kelly stepped forward. Her face was silvery in the darkness, but her eyes sparked with anger.
Are you sleeping with Jack?
No.
Why would you ask me that?
Julie was right. You did look awfully cozy.
We were talking. You sure as hell weren't talking about business.
Why would you care if I was sleeping with Jack? Worried about your new best friend?
You sound jealous.
Hardly. I wouldn't want to be friends with that manipulative, vindictive narcissist if she was the last person on Earth.
Kelly's head jerked as if she'd been slapped.
What are you talking about? She's nothing like that.
She narrowed her eyes.
How would you know anything about her at all? You haven't even tried to get to know her.
I've been busy. Plus, I thought I had friends. I don't need to try to make more.
You certainly tried to be friends with Jack when he first came.
Which you encouraged, if you remember.
That was before I knew him.
Oh, and what do you know about him?
Well, he's a shitty police chief, and he's a philanderer. He cheated on Julie all the time. That's the real reason she left. She's telling the other story so she doesn't hurt Ethan.
Why would you believe her?
Because I remember how he went after you when he moved here. Or have you forgotten? Jesus, he hadn't even unpacked before he was trying to get into your pants.
Ellie's stomach churned, as realization dawned.
You just told her. What? You told Julie.
Ellie pushed Kelly away.
How could you? She has a right to know what her husband has been doing while she's been gone. While you two were talking about the Henry, she was telling me how he was a carouser before she left, and I said I could believe it. What does it matter to you? Nothing came of it. I told her that in no uncertain terms.
Ellie shook her head.
You need to stay out of other people's business. Did I lie? What? When I told Julie you didn't sleep with her husband. Are you asking me again if I'm sleeping with Jack? The answer is no. Again. Now fucking drop it. And don't you ever talk to Julie McBride about me again. Understand? Why do you hate her? The better question is, why do you like her? How could you possibly find anything in common with a woman who abandoned her son for an entire year? She didn't abandon him. He had his father, and she was constantly in touch with him through email.
Susan walked up so quietly she was upon Kelly and Ellie before they knew she was there.
Hey, girls, am I interrupting?
Yes, thank God, Ellie said. I need to go home. I think I'm going to puke again.
What's wrong? Are you sick?
Susan asked. Ellie bit back a smart-ass comment. Susan and Brian had defended her against Michelle and Julie, a pair of women Ellie hoped never ganged up against her. Ellie was pretty sure they would destroy her, and smile while doing it.
I think I'm getting the flu, Ellie said. I think the party is breaking up anyway, Susan said. Great, Kelly said. Are you blaming me?
Ellie asked.
You said it, not me.
With a glare, Kelly pushed past her oldest friends. Ellie watched Kelly dissolve into the dark. She sighed and turned to Susan.
Was I wrong back there? Did I overreact? No. She was baiting me, wasn't she? Julie or Michelle? Take your pick. I get Michelle, but why would Julie? Kelly told her Jack flirted with me before she got into town. Ah, that explains a lot.
Susan put her arm around Ellie. Ellie leaned into her friend.
Did you sleep with him?
Ellie took a deep breath. She wanted to tell someone, to share the burden of the secret, to have someone to commiserate with, someone who would listen, let her vent, and always tell her she was making the right decision. Susan and Kelly had always been those people. Until now.
No.
Ellie tugged at Susan's hand.
Come on, let's help clean up.
The rustle of leaves kept Ellie from moving.
Did you hear that?
She whispered.
What?
Susan whispered back.
I thought I heard something.
Ellie peered into the trees to their right. She thought she saw movement, but it was too dark to be sure. When she heard the crunch of leaves again, she tugged on Susan's hand harder.
I heard that, Susan said. Let's get out of here.
Though the mood was decidedly more subdued, the party wasn't breaking up. Ellie focused on toasting her marshmallow to a perfect golden brown while the others chatted about the snipe festival. By unspoken agreement, Jack and Ellie toasted their marshmallows across the fire from each other and pretended the other didn't exist. Jack stared blankly into the fire while his marshmallows burned to a crisp. Ellie tapped her marshmallow against his, and his eyes met hers.
You like them burnt?
Jack noticed his marshmallows and pulled them from the fire. Julie walked up, and with the ease and familiarity of years of marriage, they wordlessly went about making s'mores for each other. Julie sandwiched the graham crackers and chocolate around one marshmallow and pulled the complete s'more from the straightened wire hanger. She stuck it in Jack's mouth and repeated the process with the second. She glanced up at Jack and wiped a bit of melted marshmallow from the corner of his lips.
You're a mess.
Jack shoved the rest of the s'more in his mouth, and Julie held out the second one.
You take it. I'll make another.
Ellie turned away, overcome with the feeling she had witnessed an intimacy, a familiarity, which would take years to develop with Jack, if ever. How much of Ellie's future relationship with Jack would be retreads of his time with Julie?
I told Ethan it was a prank, Julie said to Amy. He immediately showed me a picture and said he almost got beat up when he said the same thing.
The locals laughed. Amy said,
The same thing happened to me. Well, not the beaten up part, but you'd have thought I called them all atheists or something. These Stillwaterites get protective about their snipe. Why don't we go on one tonight? Julie said.
Ellie smashed her marshmallow between two graham crackers and a slab of Hershey's chocolate. A wild goose chase only works if someone isn't in on the joke, Ellie snapped. Julie's expression was slightly vacant. Kelly opened her mouth to clarify when they were jolted by Brian's yell and the sound of fighting. Jack handed his half-eaten s'more to Julie and ran toward the scuffle.
I can't believe you!
Brian yelled at Matt. Chris strained to keep Brian in check.
I thought we were friends!
It's business, man! I'm sorry!
There was a note of pleading beneath Matt's anger.
It isn't business! It's my life! My livelihood! I was counting on this deal, you knew that!
It's out of my hands!
Oh no,
Susan said, heading toward her husband. Ellie crossed her arms over her chest against a sudden chill and looked around, her instinct to find her best friend and be beside her. Kelly and Julie stood together watching. Ellie turned away, and suddenly Eddie was beside her out of breath.
I heard yelling.
Ellie studied him. His face was flushed.
Brian jumped Matt.
Without looking at her, he nodded and walked to the men. Michelle walked out of the woods in the general direction Eddie came from. She winked broadly at Ellie, wiped the edges of her mouth, and followed Eddie.
Figures.
Brian jerked himself free from Chris and stormed to his truck, Susan on his heels. Susan said something over her shoulder to Matt. Brian stopped and turned so abruptly Susan ran into him. Brian grabbed his wife by the arms, said something in a low voice to her, and dragged her to the car. Eddie jogged toward Brian, catching him before he got in his truck. He grasped Brian's shoulder, pulled him close, and whispered in his ear. Brian's face glowed with anger before slacking into shock. Eddie pulled away, a smile on his face, and gave Brian a genial pat on the back. Chris closed up the smoker and opened the driver's door to the fifth wheel.
What are you doing?
Michelle asked.
Leaving. Get in or get a ride with someone else.
He got in and slammed the door. Michelle walked around and got in the passenger seat and they drove off. Matt walked over to the table and started packing up. Amy worked so hard to ignore her husband, but Ellie was sure she'd seen the blood stain on his shirt and the beginning of what promised to be an impressive shiner.
What a way to end the night, huh?
Julie said when she and Kelly walked up. Everyone ignored her. Kelly didn't say anything either, but started helping with a puzzled look on her face.
I wouldn't worry about it, Matt, Julie continued. He seems like a bully to me.
Everyone stopped and stared at her.
What? I know he's your friend and all, but take it from the one person here not weighted down with history and baggage. Brian Grant is a bully.
Jack and Eddie walked up.
Can we help? Jack said.
It's okay,
Amy said.
We've got it, but thanks.
Julie paused, looked around the group of people, none of whom would look at her.
Okay, if you're sure. Thanks for inviting us. We had a great time.
Yes, thank you, Jack said.
He gently grasped Julie's arm and led her away. The rest of them finished cleaning up. Without a word.
Chapter 16.
Did you see Eddie slither out of the woods with Michelle tonight?
Jack stopped,
his shirt halfway off. What?
No, I suppose you were too busy holding Matt back from Brian. What was that all about?
You know as much as I do. What about Eddie and Michelle?
They came out of the woods together. Well, almost together. Eddie was buttoning his pants, and Michelle was wiping her mouth. She made sure Ellie saw it, too. Did you know they were sleeping together?
Yeah. He told me the other day.
He'll fuck anything, won't he?
Julie threaded her jeans through a hanger and wedged it into the too tiny closet.
This house is awful.
I like it, Jack said.
The bathroom is down the hall.
You'll survive. Jack pulled his money clip, keys, and change from his front pocket and tossed them on the dresser. In only her panties and bra, Julie walked down the hall to the bathroom. Jack opened his mouth to remind her about Ethan, when he remembered Ethan was sleeping over at Troy's, and that he had all but promised Julie they would sleep together. Shit. How could Jack do that on the same night Ellie said she loved him? He couldn't wait until January. He would call Bob Underwood tomorrow to start divorce proceedings. Ethan wanted to be treated like an adult. It was time to see if he could handle bad news with some maturity. Jack would continue this farce until after Thanksgiving, but no longer. Continuing meant making Julie believe he wasn't cheating on her, though, which meant sleeping with her. Jack laughed. Incredulous, he was sitting there, dreading the prospect of fucking a beautiful woman. He closed his eyes and reminded himself none of this had been his idea. Ellie knew what this ruse would mean and still insisted on it. That absolved him, didn't it? Julie returned, face clean, hair brushed to a flaxen shine. Jack knew she would smell faintly of oranges, thanks to the face moisturizer she used at night. Her breath would smell like Crest. Her body would be smooth and silky. Jack's dick hardened. She stood in front of him between his legs. She ran her hands through his hair.
And it's a real shame, too, Julie said.
What?
That Eddie's cheating on Ellie. Kelly's told me about her luck with men. Leave it to Eddie to pick a woman with more baggage than him.
He says they're friends.
Well, he's lying.
She ran her finger over the scar above his right eyebrow. Jack rested his hands on Julie's hips and tried not to remember a similar scene at Ellie's 6 weeks ago when she removed his stitches.
What were you two really talking about?
The Henry.
Bullshit.
Jack unhooked Julie's bra, removed it, and tossed it aside.
Kelly told me you flirted with Ellie when you moved to town.
Did she? Jack took her breast in his mouth, hoping to distract her.
I told her it was ridiculous.
Julie gasped and clutched at his head, pressing him closer.
Ellie's not your type at all. Now Kelly, on the other hand.
Would you stop talking about other women while we're fucking?
We aren't fucking yet.
Shut up and we will.
Tell me you love me.
You haven't earned it yet.
Say it.
Fuck you. He flipped her onto the bed, pinned her arms above her head. He stopped, wanting her to do something that would make him want to stop. Her shocked expression morphed to one of triumph, pleasure. She wrapped her legs around him and pressed him closer. She still liked it rough. Jack thought of all the men who'd fucked Julie in the last 2 years, and decided to give her exactly what she wanted. Chapter 17.
Since when did they start locking the damn doors?
Fred tried truck after truck with no luck. He tucked his hands beneath his armpits to warm them. He needed gloves, a coat, shoes. Damn, tramping had turned into a chore. He sat on the ground against the front tire of his favorite truck to think, shivering. He'd run through the $60 McBride had given him quicker than usual. Shouldn't have used that 10 on food. The whiskey went quicker and quicker these days, and donations had fallen off to practically nothing.
In exchange for a hot meal, Churches wanted a tearful confession and his immortal soul. Two things Fred couldn't give for the one thing he didn't really want. Too bad Stillwater didn't have a Catholic church so he could steal the wine. Just a bunch of teetotaling Baptists and closet-drinking Methodists, neither of which would give money to a remorseless drunk. McBride was the only revenue stream Fred had left. Fred needed whiskey, food, and a coat. To get those, he needed information, which, looking around at the deserted yard, wasn't going to happen on this cold Saturday night. He stood and walked through the maze of closely parked trucks to the back of the nearest building. He paused, hand on the doorknob. He'd never tried the buildings before. He didn't hold out much hope this tiny office would be more comfortable than the cab of an empty truck. The only chair he saw was plastic. Still, it looked warm. He tried the knob. It didn't budge. He spent the next 15 minutes trying every one of Doyle Industries' buildings with no luck. He collapsed at the back of the last building from exhaustion. The long, cold night stretched in front of him. 30 wasted years stretched behind. He supposed it was time to come to Jesus. Luckily, it was about to be Sunday, if it wasn't already. Fred had to make it until 8 a.m., when he knew Brother Dobson would get to the church. A few hours, he could do it. He closed his eyes, and with teeth chattering from the cold, started practicing his confession.
"I've seen the error in my ways, Brother Dobson."
The rumble of a Mack truck and the squeal and whoosh of air brakes engaging broke his concentration. The rattle of chain-link fence, the truck moving through the gate, the rattle of the gate closing told Fred he wasn't alone anymore. He tucked his knees close to his chest and wrapped his arms around them, for warmth and to make himself as small as possible. He felt reasonably good about his hiding place between an AC unit and an electrical box at the back of the furthest building in the lot, but he didn't want to take any chances. His stomach flipped over in fear when he felt the vibrations from the front bay opening. The rumble of the engine echoed throughout the large building, through the wall, and burrowed deep into Fred's chest. His heart hammered in his throat. He stared at Doyle Industries' back fence. Of course, his hole was at the opposite end.
"Sit here. Don't move. They won't open the back bay door. It's too cold. There's no reason for them to come back here at all. You're fine. Sit tight. Plan your confession. Think warm thoughts." "I've seen the error in my ways, Brother Dobson."
The crunch of gravel, the sound of a car door closing, distracted him.
"Christ."
Fred squeezed his eyes closed. Footsteps. Voices inside. The sound of another car. More footsteps.
"I've seen the error in my ways, Brother Dobson."
Talking. Tools clanging. Laughter. Fred's eyes opened. Then again, maybe he should sneak around the side and listen in. The rest of his body might be breaking down from abuse, but his hearing was better than ever. His invisibility to the upright citizens of Stillwater and his good hearing had been keeping him alive for 30 years. McBride wasn't the only chief who had paid him to be his spy, but he was the only one too stupid to make the connection between Muldoon and Pollard. Fred let his head fall against the metal building and smiled. Bingo. He didn't have to risk his neck by eavesdropping. He'd tell McBride about his deal with Pollard. Fred had some major shit on that old asshole. No telling how much it'd be worth. Fred smiled and thought about the pool of whiskey he'd be swimming in soon, which was why he didn't hear the new truck drive into the yard. But he did hear the yelling.
Drugs, Michelle? Are you kidding me?
The clanging stopped.
Matt, let's go somewhere to talk.
Eddie? You're in on this too? Jesus!
Matt, out here. Now.
Fred used the wall to help himself stand. He inched over to the corner of the building and peeked around. This little drama would set him up for a while. He could keep the Pollard dirt in his back pocket.
Calm down, Matt, Michelle said.
Calm down? You're running drugs through our father's company and you want me to calm down?
God, you're such an idiot.
Oh, really? I'm not the one breaking the law.
Yes, you are. You just don't know it.
What?
Why do you think we brought you on, huh? When you came to us with the idea, I knew it would be the perfect cover with you being such a goody two-shoes. You think we give two shits about your organic produce?
You mean Dad knows about this?
Michelle laughed.
Who do you think started the business?
Matt turned and walked away a few feet, running his hands through his hair.
For how long?
30 years.
Matt's mouth gaped. Then he laughed in disbelief.
30 years?
You might not remember when he lost everything back in the '80s, but I do. Dad has always shielded his precious golden boy from the big bad world. It was either drugs or destitution. Like it or not, drugs have bankrolled your entire life. Even now.
I can't believe this.
Look, you don't have to worry about it. No one would ever think you're involved.
You just said
we've set it up so nothing will blow back on you. That's the only way Dad would bring you on, as long as you could remain blissfully ignorant. You're safe. Just keep your mouth shut and look the other way. If you don't, I will take you down with us.
Are you threatening me?
You're goddamn right I'm threatening you. Do you really think I would let my pussy brother ruin everything I've built?
You said Dad built it.
Michelle laughed bitterly.
His operation was chicken feed when he brought me on. I'm the one who built it up into what it is. We're so fucking big, the Pedrozas want in on it. Dad takes all the credit while I take all the risks. So if you think there's any way in hell I'm going to let your guilty conscience ruin what I've created, you're out of your goddamn mind.
Matt stepped back slightly.
You wouldn't hurt me.
Just fucking try me.
A hand clamped down on Fred's shoulder. He jumped, turned his head to the side, saw the outline of an elaborate tattoo on the forearm of his assailant, and pissed himself.
Chapter 18.
Ellie decided she had missed her calling. Instead of banking and business ownership, she should have been an actress. If the smiles from all of the elderly people she'd greeted were any indication, she was killing the part of a happy, healthy Christian woman. She shook her old piano teacher's hand and breathed through her mouth, hoping the 4 doses of mouthwash and 5 Altoids, along with brushing her teeth 4 times, freshened her breath. It sure hadn't killed the horrible taste in her mouth.
"Good luck on Tuesday," the sweet old woman said.
She leaned forward and whispered,
"I'm voting for you."
"Thank you, Mrs. Hennessy."
Ellie made the mistake of breathing through her nose and was assaulted by the smell of mothballs. She hoped her grimace looked enough like a smile to fool Mrs. Hennessy. The old woman turned, and Ellie grasped her roiling stomach and sat down. She leaned over to Kelly, who sat beside her.
"I think I'm going to be sick."
"Buck up, little camper, you can do it."
"I only had 2 beers, for Christ's sake. Technically only 1. Part of 1. I practically didn't drink at all."
"Shh, you're in church."
Ellie rolled her eyes. Reverend Woodard, worn Bible in hand, approached the podium.
Welcome to all of our members and guests.
Ellie checked out. She'd heard this same song and dance every Sunday for 42 years. The church was a little more than half full, everyone sitting in their regular spaces. Like every week, Ellie and Kelly sat together midway down the left-hand side. The previous night's argument hung in the air between them, but it wasn't big enough to break their routine. Announcements ended. There was a rustling while everyone opened their hymnals to 335, Standing on the Promises. Ellie and Kelly opened their shared hymnal, but neither needed it. Kelly's voice was beautiful, but it wasn't loud enough to overcome the cacophony of reedy, elderly voices around them. Like the town, First Baptist Stillwater needed an injection of youth into its congregation, and fast, or it would die out. When they stood for the next hymn, Ellie looked back at Susan and Brian's pew. They weren't there. Kelly caught her eye when she turned back to the front. Their absence was not a good sign. Kelly and Ellie had spent many, many hours discussing Susan and Brian's relationship, what they knew and what they didn't. Everyone in town knew the Grant men had tempers and were quick to fight each other and other men. No one knew for sure if it was true that Grant wives were more accident-prone than other women, or if they were helped down the stairs and into doors. If the emergency room doctors and nurses knew, they weren't talking. Susan had, of course, always vehemently denied Brian abused her. Many times, Susan's facade had fractured, and her two best friends had thought she might be ready to confide, to do something, to leave. But Susan always closed back up, leaving her friends with the feeling of helplessness they carried with them since standing up with Susan as she promised to love and obey Brian 24 years earlier. The congregation stood to sing "It Is Well With My Soul." Not one of Ellie's favorites, but as she sang, the words comforted her.
Yes, it is well with my soul.
Across the aisle sat Julie McBride, confused by the tune, and clearly not a Southern Baptist. Ellie didn't know why the McBrides chose this church. She was relatively sure Jack was Catholic, but religion hadn't ever come up in their short time together. Ellie assumed they were at First Baptist because Ethan had friends there. Whether her membership in the congregation had any bearing on Jack's choice, she didn't know. She realized for the first time that she didn't care. Gone was the queasy stomach that had been constant since the horrible night 6 weeks earlier, when Jack told her his wife had returned. Well, Ellie was queasy at the moment, but it was a different nausea, the kind that would go away when she ate, and got as far away as possible from the smell of mothballs wafting from Mrs. Hennessy. The thick carpet covering her tongue made her regret the beer she drank the night before, but she didn't regret telling Jack how she felt. She now felt as light and happy as she felt their first night together. She loved him. It was as simple as that. He knew now, though surely he had known before. What he did with the information was up to him. She'd probably gone too far with the demand he leave town if he didn't divorce his wife, but the little amount of time she'd been around Jack and Julie was proof enough. Jack needed to know she wasn't some fucking doormat who would stand idly by while he built a life with Julie in Ellie's hometown. If he chose Julie, fine. Ellie'd had her heart broken before and had lived through it. She would again. But she'd be goddamned if Jack McBride rubbed her nose in it every day for the rest of her life. Ellie prayed, asking God to forgive her for mentally cursing in church, sat and passed the offering plate. Brother Woodard had stepped away from the pulpit in the middle of the last hymn. He returned, head bowed, and waited for the ushers to bring the plates to the front and for the final solemn organ note to end. He peered across his congregation, taking in every single face. Checking who was there, Ellie thought.
Brothers and sisters, I have been given some grave news.
Kelly and Ellie clutched each other's hand, their thoughts immediately going to Susan. Bile, tangy and acidic, rose in Ellie's throat, and her mind flashed through the events of the night before, and all the time she had been on the verge of confronting Susan about leaving Brian. Regret, heavy and cold, settled on her shoulders. For the second time in her life, she'd failed a best friend.
A prominent, loving couple has been brutally taken from us.
Brother Woodward paused. Red blotches crept up his neck to his face. He wasn't grieving. He was furious.
We don't have all the details. We will probably never know the why of this horrible, horrible tragedy. All we can do is trust in God that this is somehow part of His plan, and that the deaths of these two fine Christians were not in vain.
Oh my God, it's real.
Kelly was squeezing so hard Ellie couldn't feel her hand.
Let us bow our heads and pray for the dearly departed souls of Matt and Amy Doyle.
Part 2. Snipe Hunt. Chapter 19.
In his previous 25 years of police work, Minor Jessen had investigated two murders. Since Jack McBride took over as chief of police 8 weeks earlier, he'd seen 6 dead bodies and a human skeleton. Publicly, he didn't put much stock in the grumblings around town blaming Jack for the increase in crime, but privately, he started to wonder if a little corruption wasn't a small price to pay if it meant he wouldn't have to ever see another woman with her brains blown out. He and Jack, gloved and booted, stood outside the door of Matt and Amy Doyle's bedroom and watched Dr. Sue Poole, the local OBGYN who shared coroner duties with her husband, take a temperature reading of Amy Doyle's body. Simon, the crime scene tech, booted, gloved, and gowned, took pictures of every step. Dr. Poole straightened and stared impassively at the body on the far side of the bed, as though she saw this scene every day. Amy Doyle lay on her stomach under the blankets, her face turned toward the wall, one pajama-clad leg cocked outside the blankets. From Miner's angle, there was only a round bullet hole, darkened with blood, in the center of the back of her head. If Miner leaned to the left a little, he could see where Amy's face used to be. If he looked at the wall, he could see where it was now.
Time of death sometime between 1 o'clock a.m. and 4 o'clock a.m. Gunshot wound to the back of the head would appear to be the cause of death. Of course, we'll have to confirm it in the autopsy.
Sue shook her head, and if shaking off her professional distance, her impassivity was replaced with sadness. Sue packed up her gear and moved out of the tech's way and into the den. Matt's body sat upright in a recliner, his hands covered in plastic bags. The mirror image of Amy's wound, Matt had a bullet hole in his forehead, above a blackened eye, and the back of his head was blown back into the recliner. His vacant eyes stared into the kitchen, his eyebrows in a permanent arch of surprise. He wore a plaid flannel shirt over a t-shirt, jeans, and work boots, and smelled faintly of wood smoke.
He's still wearing what he had on at the bonfire, Jack said.
Amy went to bed and Matt stayed up, Miner said.
Jack nodded and watched Simon take pictures of Dr. Poole's inspection of Matt's body.
Same as Amy,
Dr. Poole said. Voice flat. She twisted her mouth.
What is it? Jack said. Do you see something else?
No.
She replaced her instruments in her bag and faced Jack and Miner.
I hope murders aren't going to be a commonplace occurrence. I much prefer welcoming people into the world than seeing them out.
She nodded to the two men and walked out the back door. Miner thought he saw Jack's face tighten at the mild rebuke, but Jack turned away too quick for him to tell for sure. Simon, he called to the tech. We'll be in the kitchen.
Sure thing.
The camera clicked and flashed behind them. Miner marveled at the neatness of Amy and Matt's house. It looked like something out of a design magazine. Light poured in through the breaks in the curtains. Pillows placed just so. Canisters on the kitchen countertop that might be functional or might be decoration. He picked up a huge, well-burned pumpkin spice Yankee candle from the middle of the kitchen table and sniffed, hoping to combat the smell of death hovering in the air. His house looked nothing like this. It was small, old, out of date. Junk littered the kitchen counter. Dishes were always in the sink. The lights were always low, the television always on. The smell of sickness everywhere. Miner sniffed the candle again. Miner? Miner looked up.
Hmm?
Jack's brow furrowed. Are you okay?
Besides seeing the body of a kid I watched grow up, you mean?
Miner put the candle down with a snap.
Right as rain.
Sir, I can't let you in there.
Officer Nathan Starling's voice carried through the house.
Move out of my way, son.
Sir, I...
Jack nodded to Miner, who moved to the front door. Joe Doyle, dressed in his Sunday suit, loomed over Starling.
Joe, you don't want to come in here.
I saw the bodies, or have you forgotten?
Jack appeared next to Miner. This is a crime scene. You cannot be here. Let's step outside.
It's a zoo out there,
Doyle said. Then let's go to the station. Even being in the foyer here is contaminating the crime scene. You don't want a defense attorney to use it as a way to throw out what we find, do you? Doyle considered.
No.
Come on, Joe, Miner said. I'll drive you.
We'll meet you there.
Jack nodded. Miner ushered Joe out the front door and to his personal truck. He'd come straight from home when Jack called. They were out of Matt and Amy's neighborhood and on Old Yorkville when Joe broke down in tears. Miner squirmed in his seat.
My son,
Doyle sobbed.
My son.
Joe, I'm sorry for your loss.
Miner.
He sniffed lustily, wiping the snot from beneath his nose.
You have no idea.
How's Mary?
Sedated. I wish I could take a pill and know everything would be taken care of.
His voice, so full of grief for his son, held no compassion for his wife.
I'm sure Michelle will handle everything.
They turned into the square.
Yes. Michelle will take care of everything. Though if it wasn't for her...
Joe gazed out the window at the book bank, which was filled with people.
Look at them. Gossiping, telling a bunch of damn lies, spreading rumors. Of course, Ellie's in the middle of it. I can't wait to crush her on Tuesday.
You aren't dropping out?
Joe looked at Miner as if he'd lost his mind.
Drop out? Hell no. I'm going to win. And when I do, I'm going to make you chief.
Mr. Doyle, Jack said in a smooth, complacent voice. Doyle's eye twitched, his anger in Miner's truck carrying over into the station.
I want to know what's being done.
Jack motioned toward the chair in front of his desk. As would I. Have a seat, I'll fill you in. Miner stood back and rested his hands on his gun belt. Jack sat after Doyle had taken his seat. I'm so sorry for your loss. I didn't know Matt very well, but I liked him a lot. I was looking forward to getting to know him. Doyle's rigid posture softened slightly. Jack should have stopped there. It's a damn shame. A young man with so much potential dying so suddenly. Doyle's eyes narrowed and his voice rose.
He didn't just die. He was murdered.
Jack nodded. Not the way I would have expected someone like Matt to die.
If you'd done a better job catching the drug dealers who've been terrorizing our town the last few weeks, this would have never happened.
Jack's eyes brightened. What makes you think it was drug dealers? Was Matt mixed up in drugs? Maybe PEDs? Doyle lifted his chin. Apparently aware his drug dealer comment had given Jack an idea Doyle would rather him not have.
I don't know what a PED is. Any two-bit criminal in the county knows they can commit all kinds of crime in this town and not be caught. Probably a robbery gone wrong.
Jack nodded. Miner knew as well as Jack that two-bit criminals don't rob occupied houses in the middle of the night, nor do they kill the homeowners in their sleep. Robbery is a possibility, Jack said. Obviously, the big stuff is still at the house. Computers, television, phones.
Once we've finished processing the scene, we'll need you to look around. Tell us if anything of value is missing, Miner said.
Jack twisted his head to glare at Miner. Miner shrugged and nodded in Doyle's direction.
Yes, of course, Miner. Whatever you need, Doyle said.
Jack turned back to Doyle. Can you tell us what happened this morning? How you found the bodies? Doyle rubbed his face.
I didn't find them. My granddaughter Madison did. Christ. You aren't going to have to talk to her, are you?
We might. But right now, your version will do. Doyle cleared his throat.
Right. I was at home getting ready for church. Mary, my wife, was making pancakes for Charlie. That's Matt and Amy's son. He spent the night with us last night.
And Madison? Was she at home?
No. She spent the night with friends. Madison forgot her Bible. She saw their cars and told her friends she'd ride with her parents.
Doyle cleared his throat again.
She called Mary. Hysterical. I told Mary I'd go right over. When I got there, I called out for Madison, but she didn't answer. The house was eerie quiet. I called out for Matt and Amy, even though I knew they wouldn't answer.
How did you know?
I suppose I suspected it when Madison called. She's not a hysterical girl. Level-headed, top of her class. For her to be like that...
Doyle coughed and covered his mouth with his fist.
The master is closest to the garage. That's the way I came in.
He cleared his throat, struggling to hold back emotion.
After I went looking for Madison, found her in her bedroom closet back behind her hanging clothes, arms wrapped around her knees, talking to herself. I heard Starling downstairs.
You called 911?
Yeah, on my way over.
Doyle sat back in his chair.
Now you know what I know. What do you know?
Mr. Doyle, we've been at it 6 hours. I know it sounds like a long time, but we're still gathering physical evidence. Right now, we know cause and time of death definitively. Everything else is supposition. What we do know, we're going to keep under wraps for a while longer. Gossip spreads across Stillwater like wildfire. We'll keep you in the loop as much as possible, but this is a murder investigation. We won't share everything.
I want Miner in charge.
Jack chuckled. You don't have a say who investigates what, Joe.
When I become city councilman,
if you become city councilman, you still won't have a say. This is my department, and I make the decisions about who does what.
We'll see.
The two men glared at each other. When was the last time you talked to Matt? Jack said. Doyle looked down and away. After a pause, he said,
I guess yesterday at the Snap Festival.
Talk about anything in particular?
The election? The bonfire they were having?
Okay. Jack stood and held out his hand. I'm sure I'll have more questions for you tomorrow, as well as the rest of your family. It goes without saying y'all need to stay close to town. When Doyle stood, he seemed to take up the entire room.
You better solve this case, McBride, or there'll be hell to pay.
Oh, I'll solve it. You better be ready for some uncomfortable truths to come out in the process. Doyle scowled at Jack's offered hand without taking it, turned, and stalked out of his office.
Shit,
Jack said, his bravado slipping into weariness.
You sure love to poke the bear, don't you?
Miner said. Why did you interrupt? Miner closed the door to Jack's office.
Because you don't want him to suspect you're on to his drug operation. They're already gonna go turtle on us. Leastwise, that's what I'd do. You waving a red flag in front of Joe's face ain't gonna help none either. Doyle doesn't trust you. He trusts me. We can foster it, take advantage of it.
Jack turned his head and studied Miner so long, he wondered if he'd raised Jack's suspicions. You're right. Good cop, bad cop. Oldest trick in the book.
And easiest to sell. Especially when you've got an ego like yours.
Go on, good cop. Take your mark back home. Chapter 20. It was the busiest Sunday in the book bank's short life. Everyone who had tisk-tisked at Ellie being open on Sunday afternoons spent most of this overcast Sabbath loitering, drinking coffee, and gossiping, though since it was a Sunday, they called it fellowshipping. Some bought a cup of coffee and believed it bottomless. Others had the grace to pick up the nearest book and purchase it. They emptied the pastry case by 3 o'clock, and Ellie was out of small to-go cups by 5. Paige Grant worked with Ellie in silence, save for whatever communication was necessary to get their jobs done. She was distracted, made the wrong order a couple of times, and had a furrow of concern on her brow that occasionally looked more like anger.
Everything okay?
Ellie asked early in the shift.
Fine.
It was on the tip of Ellie's tongue to ask why her parents hadn't been at church, but as much as Ellie wanted to know, another part of her didn't. They worked on. The gossip, fellowshipping, was redundant. No one knew anything except Matt and Amy were dead, and Madison had found them. Rumors swirled it was a copycat of the Ramos murders from 2 months earlier, but those were quickly dismissed by others who didn't believe Matt was wrapped up in anything illegal, especially drugs. Others pursed their lips and stayed silent, pushing away the idea that their turning a blind eye to Doyle's shady dealings over the years might have somehow led to the death of a young, well-liked couple and orphaned 2 children. After all, if not the Doyles, someone else would fill the void. Evil abhors a vacuum or some such. Besides, the Doyles were the biggest employer in town. Gave back to the community. Many had weighed the good against the bad and decided the bad could be overlooked for the common good. Kelly walked in the book bank and wove her way through everyone, greeting people, smiling, lightly flirting on her way to the office. She jerked her head at Ellie to follow.
You got this? Ellie asked Paige. I'm going to check to see if we have more small to-go cups. We don't, but sure. I've got it.
Paige kept her eye on the espresso machine, but her face hardened. Kelly leaned against the desk, waiting. Ellie pulled the safe door almost shut.
Well? Broken hand,
Kelly said.
Son of a bitch. She's in bed, drugged to high heaven.
Did she say what happened? Ellie asked.
The usual. She slammed it in the car door, accident, yada yada. They were in the truck last night. Exactly.
They stared at each other.
We have to do something.
Kelly threw up her hands.
She won't let us. Did Paige say anything? Hasn't said 2 words other than work-related all day. But she's not happy.
Kelly rubbed her forehead.
What do we do?
Ellie sighed.
Be there for her. Try not to judge her. Hate Brian's guts.
Kelly dropped her hand.
I don't have any jobs coming up, or I'd throw him one to keep him happy. They're hurting for money. She won't take money from me. I've tried.
The phone beeped. Ellie picked up.
Is it busy again?
Yeah.
I'll be right there.
They walked out of the office.
Has it been like this all day?
Since I opened.
You're the new gossip mill.
I guess so.
Shit.
Julie McBride grinned and waved at them from across the room. Ellie didn't look back at her best friend, but went straight behind the counter.